This is Broadway to Brazil, the only podcast to tell the remarkable story of Corinthians Casuals FC, the English non-league club who are big in Brazil. It's just gone 4 p.m. on a hot and sticky summer's day in District 14. Two elderly sisters, aged 88 and 93, take their seats, having just arrived from northern Italy. They've travelled around 600 miles to be here in Budapest. They're here to take in a match between two amateur clubs from England and Hungary's lowest levels of football. Out on the pitch, the touring Corinthians Casuals players toil in the sweltering Central European heat. For this assorted group of teachers, labourers and students, playing a match in 30-plus degrees is no normal thing. But then again, not much is normal about this particular occurrence.
It's still, I'm still trying to get over it. All us boys are out here in Budapest. It's just surreal, mate. Absolutely surreal.
I checked the box history and then I found we played the first ever Corinthian Cup game in Budapest, in Hungary. I just screamed in my study and my wife didn't know what happened with it.
Memories and things like that you can't buy. I can have a slightly bigger bank balance, but at the end of the day, when you go, you can't take that money with you, but you can have memories.
I mean, that's a summer and a half. Graduate from school, pass your officer's exam, make your debut for a top-flight football club, and then go to war.
The match in question is the final of the Egri Erbstein tournament. But why had two elderly women travelled from Italy to be here? What exactly is the Egri Erbstein tournament, and what on earth were the Corinthians Casuals doing in Budapest? To answer this question, we need to go back to the summer of 2018. Cast your mind back if you can. Meghan Markle and Prince Louis had just joined the royal family, and a nation shrugged its shoulders at England's prospects in the forthcoming World Cup. Meanwhile, the Broadway to Brazil series closed with a thrilling climax. James Bracken's entirely unpaid Corinthians Casuals had gained promotion into the Isthmian Premier, the highest level the club had ever played at. It was also when my Broadway to Brazil co-host Dominic Bliss logged onto his computer to find he had a mysterious email.
I got an email in the summer of 2018 from a Hungarian man who I'd never heard of, I didn't know. So when he introduced himself as the president of Budapesti Atletikai Club, or BAK, BOK, they pronounce it BOK, I obviously read on, and he said we've reformed this summer.
This email would kick off a chain of events that would lead to a large group of us making a 1,000-mile trip to watch Corinthians Casuals in an international tournament. In this one-off special, we'll bring you the full story. This is Broadway to Budapest.
Hello, Corinthians Casuals. I wanted to say good luck.
That's David Luiz, Brazilian superstar with a glittering honours list, once the world's most expensive defender. Today, I'll explain how a summer football tournament connected Luiz to 1980s new wave icons Duran Duran. But in order to do so, I first need to make a quick stop off at the Austro-Hungarian Empire in 1916. For it was here that an 18-year-old midfielder named Erno Egri Erbstein was about to make his debut for Budapest Atletikai Club, BAK, or BOK, as pronounced by the Hungarian tongue.
He played for them from 1916 to 1926, but in that time he also played for some Italian clubs. So it was on and off, but he played mostly for BAK in his career.
You may not know that outside of Broadway to Brazil, Dom is also the author of an influential biography of the aforementioned Erbstein, a Jewish-Hungarian genius described as football's forgotten pioneer. I pop round to Dom's flat to get the lowdown on the Hungarian's life and legacy and how it eventually resulted in the Corinthians Casuals travelling to Budapest. He explained how Erbstein's BOK debut was part of an eventful summer that was typical of a life and career that was all too often defined by tragedy caused by external political factors.
He made his debut when he was 18 in the middle of the First World War. The same summer that he made his debut, he graduated from school with his equivalent of an A-level, his maturity exam, which then qualified him to be an officer. So he became an officer in the Habsburg army and was sent to the front weeks after making his debut. I mean, that's a summer and a half. Graduate from school, pass your officer's exam, make your debut for a top-flight football club, and then go to war.
After a modest playing career, Erbstein made the move into coaching during the interwar years, achieving regional success at Italian clubs such as Bari, Cagliari and Nocerina. But it was when he pitched up at a tiny third division Tuscan side named AS Lucchese that the Hungarian really began to make waves. In a five-year spell, he achieved two promotions and took the club to what is still their highest ever league standing, seventh in Serie A. This success led to Erbstein's most distinguished position, manager of Torino. Dom explained some of the innovations that enabled his sides to punch well above their weight.
I found out that he was probably the first coach to introduce, in Italy at least, warm-ups for the players before the match, dietary supplements, you know, like vitamins, and he had a way of importing vegetables from different parts of Europe, different parts of Italy, depending on where things were in season, so that he could always have the best food available for his players. And these are things that managers weren't thinking of for many years later. Some of the top managers have been credited with introducing that decades later. So he was doing things for the first time, and not least, he was changing tactics and changing the way that players looked at the manager. He was like a cuddly uncle to them. He'd admonish them if they got out of hand, but generally they saw him as someone that they could go to with their problems and someone who would be able to speak to them on a human level as well as a sporting level. And that is why he always managed to eke more out of people than other managers. That's why when Torino wanted to become a winning machine, they employed him as their manager.
His players' love for him makes what happened next all the more tragic. As the 1930s progressed, Mussolini's Italy became an increasingly hostile place for its Jewish population. In 1938, just months after he had taken the Torino hot seat, laws were passed making Jews second-class citizens, and Erbstein was forced to flee his adopted homeland and return to Budapest. But wartime Budapest was no safe haven. By 1944, fascists were in power in Hungary, and while Erbstein's wife and daughters found essential work in a factory making military uniforms, he was forced into a labour camp. By way of a minor miracle, they all survived the unspeakable horrors of the Hungarian Holocaust. In fact, Erbstein fled the camp shortly before they were due to be deported to Auschwitz, remarkably plotting a daring escape alongside future European Cup-winning coach Bela Gutmann. Despite the trauma, Erbstein never lost his passion for the beautiful game, and his experiences of mankind's darkest hour only makes his post-war success all the more impressive. With the Italian political climate safe again, he returned to Turin and helped to build Il Grande Torino, a side who, for many, remain the greatest ever in Italian club history, winning five successive Serie A titles. His influence was felt far beyond the Italian peninsula.
Hungary as a national team went from strength to strength off the back of what he did, as did several Italian club sides. Barcelona were the beneficiaries of a lot of those things later to come because some of those Hungary players signed for them. There was a lot of people who would say that you can trace back the Barcelona style now to the Dutch Ajax total football style of the 70s. Which is connected in turn to Hungary in the 50s, and all of them are connected in turn to Torino the 40s because of Erbstein. So I think the thread of perfect football involves him, but people lost his story.
Erbstein's life was cut short in 1949, along with his entire squad. As Il Grande Torino made their way home from a friendly in Portugal, their plane crashed into the Basilica at the top of the Superga hill that overlooks the city of Turin. All 31 passengers perished, including 18 players and a 50-year-old Erno Egri-Erbstein.
The team that was killed in the air crash were the Italy team, and they were the best players in Italy. They were heroes. At a time when Italy needed heroes, coming out of the war, the country was devastated morally and physically. They lost their whole dream team in one go. The fact that this old Hungarian guy was the manager, I think, was just almost a subplot, a secondary story. So he was lost in the legacy of the great team that he managed in Italy. In Hungary, he was seen as a pre-Soviet figure, pre-communist figure. And he left Hungary before the Iron Curtain came down to work in the Democratic West. So he wasn't remembered at all in the decades after he died in Hungary, because he was not someone that they wanted to hold up as an example. Now, if you're not remembered in the country of your birth and the country of your impact, then you're not going to be remembered anywhere else either. So his name was completely forgotten.
Completely forgotten, that is, until Dom stumbled across it in an Italian football history book, dug a little deeper, and soon found himself penning Erbstein's biography, released in 2014. Erbstein, The Triumph and Tragedy of Football's Forgotten Pioneer, is still available on Amazon for the discerning football history enthusiast. One such enthusiast is Bertalan Molnár, a marketing director in Budapest's Zugló district, where Bock used to play. When Bertalan picked up a copy of Dom's book a few years after its release, he found that the more he learned of the stories of Erbstein and Bock, the more he felt the hand of destiny on his shoulder.
The first idea was, honestly, I wanted to renew or re-establish a club which existed in the past. I mean, and it vanished in the dark, as they say, because after 47, the club was dissolved or not existing anymore.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of different reasons why it happened. And parallel with it, very strongly parallel with it, I found the Agri Erbstein story. And Agri Erbstein played in Bach for 9 years, and he was a real symbol of a team member or a team player, because he played never else in the first division, only at Bach. The story found me, and it was when you understand when someone or something is calling you, just to do it. Officially, we re-established the club, renewed the club a little bit more than a year ago. Honestly, if I can tell you, it's a dream journey.
Yes, Bock were back. Bertalan and his team ultimately took over the responsibilities of an existing club in the Hungarian sixth tier, changed their name to BAK, and adopted the blue and black stripes that Erbstein had donned many a time. So, I hear you cry, what in God's name does any of this have to do with Tolworth's Corinthian Casuals? Perhaps you recall our very last Broadway to Brazil episode. We discussed both the historical overseas exploits of the Corinthians and the Casuals of yore, and the modern-day club's trips to far-flung corners of the globe. We also briefly mentioned the donation of the Corinthian Cup, a gift from the Corinthians to their Budapest brethren to encourage amateur competition in Hungary. To explain more about this link, here's the club's community director, John Forrest, who travelled to Budapest with Dom to help lay the groundwork for the Egri Erbstein tournament.
There is definitely a spiritual link in terms of the fair play, sportsmanship. There is an ethos which he held, which we feel is completely akin to ours. There is also a tenuous link, in so much as when the Corinthians came out here in 1904 and then sent in 1905 a Corinthian Cup with the Casuals, who came over here to present it for Hungarian amateur teams. When that tournament began, Erbstein's team, Bock, was involved in it. In fact, they played in the first ever Corinthian Cup game against Ferencváros. Erbstein himself was scheduled to play in a game a few years later, but it got cancelled.
Prior to discovering this piece of history, Bertalan had already began planning the next stages of his Bock adventure, an international football tournament in Egri Erbstein's name. With his book having helped inspire the rejuvenation of the club, Dominic Bliss was made a Bock ambassador and quickly ensured that the Corinthian Casuals were on Bertalan's radar. When the Bock president found out about his club's Corinthian Cup involvement, another piece of the jigsaw slotted into place.
You can't imagine how I was at the computer, and when I knew the story Dominic has some connection with Corinthian, I checked the Bock history, and then I found we played the first ever Corinthian Cup game in Budapest in Hungary. I just screamed in my study, and my wife didn't know what happened with it, because I told, okay guys, it couldn't be a coincidence, because it's something more should be there. It's a nice how we found each other with Corinthian Casuals, and we considered them as our sister club.
In November 2018, Dominic, John and Bertalan met in a central Budapest restaurant and formalised the friendship between the two clubs. Over a bowl of goulash, they agreed to collaborate on the organisation of the inaugural Egri Erbstein tournament to take place the following summer. It's just gone noon on an oppressively hot June day in the Zsonyi Uti Stadion in the heart of Budapest's Zugló district. Pink and brown flags normally spotted in non-league grounds in the southeast of England are today tied to Hungarian wire fences. Familiar chants about Tolworth Tower are belted out by around 80 pitchside Londoners who are basking not just in the sunshine but also the novelty of their side's European tour. The prospect of seeing Corinthian casuals lift some silverware was so compelling that not only have passports been dusted off, but some have been issued for the very first time. Among this crowd are individuals who have never been abroad before. Also present is Dan Harris, a club volunteer whose voice you may recognise from the main Broadway to Brazil series.
Last time I spoke to you, Dan, last time you were on this podcast, rather, it was Hive Away. How does Budapest compare?
Yeah, it's pretty different to Hive Away. Yesterday it was 35 degrees. I think it was about 3.5 degrees in Hive. You've taken loads of fans out here. To be playing in a final of a trophy that's named after one of the most notable figures in football, even though he doesn't get as much recognition as he should do, is incredible. Year, 2 years ago, this would have been, no one would have imagined that this could happen. The club hasn't won many trophies in the last, say, 50 years, but this is a big chance to win one.
Remind me again how long you've been involved with the casuals?
So I went probably about 6 or 7 years ago, last 2-3 years. I hardly missed a game, helping out the pitch as well. Just following home and away, and now into Europe, which is absolutely mad.
I was going to say, did you ever think that you'd be coming with them on a European away day?
I thought there was a chance we could qualify for the Champions League, but we'll take this as a second anyway. You look at teams in our league, I bet none of them have done anything like this. Probably the league above that and the league below that, and no one's done anything like this to come here in this much history for a trophy.
It feels a uniquely Corinthian casuals experience, the latest in a series of eccentric club stories. As Dom details, the 12,000 capacity stadium added its own uniquely Soviet bloc charm to proceedings.
The Zsonyi Uti Stadion that BVSC play in Budapest is brilliant. It's crumbling concrete, mid-20th century Soviet ground where you can see bits of reinforced steel coming through the steps when where it's crumbled away. You've got these kind of weird shaped pointy roofs over the main stand that don't really have any kind of architectural twins anywhere in the world. I don't know what I would call them, but they're like IKEA turrets or something, yellow and blue triangular roof. But it had a gantry, it had a VIP area, bucket seats, had standing terracing, a bar, and everything we needed to make a tournament. It was brilliant, perfect.
The stadium was, of course, among many logistics that Bertalan Dom and the organising team had to tackle. They also needed to invite two other sides, with local amateur clubs Bayots and Tess Verosheg agreeing to compete. Trophies had to be created with a new spectacular Corinthian Cup minted, along with smaller prizes for the other competitors. They had to find tournament officials, and they didn't do too badly on this front, with 2011 Champions League final referee Victor Kashai recruited as the man in the middle. And a buzz had to be generated, which it was, in the I newspaper and on BBC London Radio. A bit of star power also didn't hurt on this front. Petr Cech shared the story to his millions of Twitter followers, while the casuals also received this goodwill message from a fellow Corinthian in David Luiz.
Hello, Corinthian casuals. I wanted to say good luck for the Corinthian Cup in Budapest. I hope you guys win and continue to make history in football, because you guys did a lot in my country, everywhere. I just want to wish good luck. God bless you guys, and let's go. Let's win this tournament. Big, big kiss, everybody.
And there was the question of getting the casuals over to Hungary in the first place. A GoFundMe campaign was stunning in its success, raising £5,000 in a matter of weeks. This was bolstered by an extraordinary individual donation from former casuals player John Bolson, which brought the fundraising total into five figures. As the tournament edged closer and closer to becoming a reality, Don was increasingly impressed by the organisational skills of his friends from Hungary.
It was like a little bit of a buzz starting to generate. And I'm thinking, well, I know how ramshackle this is because I've been at the centre of it. And this is terrifying. But I didn't realise, like, actually Bertelan and Danny and Peter and all the people involved, Thomas, all the people involved in running BAK over in Budapest, were not ramshackle at all. They had everything sorted. They had arranged everything. They had even got Duran Duran to give us permission to use My Own Way as the theme tune to the tournament.
Ah, yes. There was also the official tournament song. For Bertelan Molnar, this was an obvious choice. My Own Way by Duran Duran, but of course. And so he quickly set about gaining permission from the band so that he could use it. For Dominic Bliss, this was a less obvious course of action.
Bertelan told me about it, and I thought, well, okay, I get it. Right, we've done this our own way. Erbstein did things his own way. First of all, it's a bit of a stretch. Second of all, they're not going to say yes. They're just going to ignore your email. And thirdly, do we need a theme tune? You know, these were my thoughts. And then I ate humble pie because I looked like a complete idiot. Bertelan emailed Duran Duran. Not only did they come back saying, yes, please do use that song, you've got permission. They also said, we love the story behind your club. Can you send us shirts, please? So Bertelan sent them personalised shirts, which they picked up in the hotel lobby, I think in London, and posed for a photo with them, which then they posted across their social media channel. And it went, by BAK standards, by 6th Division in Hungary standards, it went viral because there were thousands and thousands of shares. And that's ridiculous for an amateur club. So Bertelan was right. It was a great idea. I was wrong. It wasn't ridiculous. It gained us news coverage in 3 countries and 4 extremely famous supporters.
And so came the tangible realisation of all this planning. 4 teams to contest 2 semi-finals, followed by a 3rd place playoff and a final. Saturday's 2nd semi would see student side Bayots take on former state railway club Testvereshcheg. But the main event and curtain raiser for the competition was the pink and brown of Corinthian Casuals taking on the black and blue of Bock. Opposite the roofless stand where the Casuals hardcore were slowly frying in the open air, I weaved through a few intrigued locals. I asked Aaron Aranyossi, a sports journalist in Budapest, for a prediction.
I honestly expect the Corinthian Casuals to walk this tournament, to be honest. But who knows? I mean, there weren't so many crazy chances so far. So yeah. As long as they keep the structure and the defending positioning and just being very calm and organized, they might make this interesting. I think it won't be a crazy goal parade, but I do believe that Casuals has this match in the pocket.
Others gave Bock more of a shout. Scottish local Kevin McCluskey, normally a Celtic fan, has started following the club after finding out about them on Twitter.
I think as the game goes on, Bock will become a stronger team.
Really?
Yeah. Just because of the heat, really. Right. You can see at the moment, Corinthians are on top. They've pretty much had all the chances. Definitely a more physical side than Bock, but I think the heat will play a part as the game goes on because we're hitting what, 34, 35 degrees and we're not used to that.
Yeah. So we could have Bock in the final then.
We could do. Have some local interest.
And it's certainly true that Bock did not roll over. A spirited performance saw them hold the Casuals to a half-time stalemate. But quality saw through in the end, a trio of second-half strikes ensuring the game finished 3-0 to the English visitors. Comfortable enough, but not the cricket score that some had speculated, and so hosts Bock left the pitch with their heads held high. Bertelan was quick to identify the physicality of the Casuals team.
I strongly believe their style, their very physical, not brutal, but very strong way of playing style, is absolutely not usual or familiar with the Hungarian teams. We are more technique, we are more having more passes or something like that. Defending against the English team, it's very, very hard.
The Casuals players, meanwhile, were just happy to survive the 35-degree heat, as captain and goalkeeper Danny Bracken relayed to me afterwards.
It's a lot different to a Tuesday night away at Ramsgate. It's something that you only ever experience if you come and play in the summer like this. No, but I thought we adapted okay. The first half, the tempo again was too slow. And they had players who could pass the ball, and they were technically quite good. But what they lacked was a little bit of physicality and a little bit of mobility. So as soon as we could go and get close to them, we got the ball back a lot easier.
And a chance to win a bit of silverware tomorrow.
I've never won anything at Casuals. This is probably my ninth year coming up. So yeah, it'd be nice to actually lift a trophy. We know it's going to be hard and the conditions are going to be against us. Hopefully there'll be a little bit more cloud tomorrow and the temperature might drop a little bit.
Could be thunderstorms, I hear.
Yeah, well, hopefully a little bit of rain would be suit us a little bit. So yeah, no, we want to win. I want to win. My brother wants to win his first trophy as a Casual manager as well. So we'll be going out there to win.
Less tight was the day's other semi-final. The several levels that separated Tess Verescheg from the students of Bayots was more obvious, as the former ran out 8-0 winners. As widely tipped, the first Egri-Erbstein tournament final would be between Casuals and the team known as Tessie. The final took place in slightly cooler conditions after the forecasted thunderstorms had come to pass. As the teams came out, Dan Harris gave me a brief insight into the opposition based on yesterday's semi-final performance.
You know what, I saw them play yesterday and they look quite decent. They keep diving around like Elastic Armstrong. I think it could be a good test for us. Rain's helped. So I think we'll know in the first 10 minutes how it's going to go.
But prior to this, the bronze medal match between Bayots and Bock had already taken place. 70 minutes into that one, Bock were disappointed to find themselves 1-0 down to a team who had lost by 8 the previous day. It was only after torrential rain forced a 20-minute delay that they rediscovered their mojo, turning the scoreline around to secure third place. However, their performance did not exactly thrill their president.
It was a killer. It was one of the worst performances in the season. It was shattered by a thunderstorm. I think we had the spirit, but nothing happened. And nothing, I mean, for us. And we conceded the goal, a very silly penalty. And after the dying minutes, it was 1-1. And at the dying minutes, or even in the extra time, we scored a magnificent goal. And this is one more thing which can be important. The guy who scored the final goal, he promised me in the break or during the break, okay, don't worry, I will win it for you. And this happened.
So players of the club happy with their third place then?
I think it's realistic because losing against Corinthians was a great experience. And I should admit they were better than us. Not the big gap between we have. But we just keep this up, and we just want to continue this work and tournament. So I hope in a few years and a few months we have a chance just to beat them.
Maybe they will. But first, did the Casuals have enough in their locker to defeat their dangerous final opponents and clinch their first ever trophy under James Bracken? Well, the final largely followed the blueprint of the semi-final, the Casuals struggling to break down an organised opposition content to play on the counter. Tessie refused to buckle, and in particular, one goalkeeper's wall-like presence blocked just about everything thrown his way. Dan Harris and his Elastic Armstrong scouting report was right on the money. With the clock racing towards 90 minutes, it dawned on everyone of a pink and brown persuasion that this was becoming a carbon copy of the club's last two final appearances. A strong display, a hatful of chances, and a total inability to get any of them past a superhuman keeper.
Go on! Go on!
It's like Dorking all over again.
Without a goal in the dying minutes, this final was headed to the exact same finish as those two playoffs. Penalties. And nobody would fancy this keeper to let many in, not even Casuals boss James Bracken.
I know what was going through our heads in those closing stages, which was those two playoff final games, the 0-0, lots of chances, and the penalties imminent, and a goalkeeper on fire. Does that go through your head as well?
Yes, which is why when Dan suggested to me, do we bring X, Y and Z on to take penalties, I said, no, we're not going to penalties, we're going to just win now.
James believed he had the tools at his disposal to make that happen, bringing winger Emil Salama and striker Harry Ottaway off the bench. Broadway to Brazil enthusiasts may recall Ottaway as the man who once scored a late goal at Hythe that put the Casuals into the playoffs, sending the away contingent into delirium. Remember this?
Go on!
Well, we're nothing if not suckers for a bit of nostalgia, as here in Budapest, I was stood by club director John Forrest and clubhouse manager Martin Foley for the closing stages of the match. Here's how they reacted when substitutes Salama and Ottaway combined in the 91st minute to provide the striker with a 2-yard open goal tap-in. Ottaway had done it. The match finished 1-0 to the Corinthian Casuals, and they were the first ever champions of the Egri Erbstein tournament. As the players made their way to the covered stand for the trophy presentations, the fans who had spent the last 2 days under the beating sun, now slightly redder in complexion, followed suit. The whole Corinthian Casuals contingent joined as one as Danny Bracken hoisted the brand new Corinthian Cup into the air.
One more question. How do you feel? Yeah.
Well, rather pleased.
What a way to win it. We're this close to another repeat.
We do have a rather unfortunate reputation in finals of drawing 0-0, having dominated the game and then losing on penalties. Thank God we didn't have to do that. A beautiful goal by Harry, and he's been a star actually in both games. But yeah, incredible. Just incredible. Lost for words.
Just the kind of memory that Danny had spoken to me about the previous day.
Don't get it at any other club. We're very, very lucky to play for Corinthian Casuals and come experience. For me, Sao Paulo, I got to go to Rio. If I was playing for any other non-league club, that wouldn't be the case. Yeah, I'd be earning a few quid, but these experiences are once-in-a-lifetime opportunities, and we're very lucky to have them.
Does that vindicate the lack of wage?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, memories and things like that, you can't buy. I can have a slightly bigger bank balance, but at the end of the day, when you go, you can't take that money with you, but you can have memories.
Danny's brother James later reflected on his first European trip and first piece of silverware with the Casuals.
Been great, been full on. We obviously playing at Balling Not Eat yesterday, 35 degrees. It was too hot to sit in it, let alone run around and play 90 minutes in it off the back of no pre-season, but credit to the lads, got through it, got the result we needed to put ourselves in this position today, and then, listen, finish the job off fantastically well.
Harry Ottaway's the man for the moment, right?
Yeah, he done well. Yeah, he's a good egg, he's a good lad, and he's a good friend, and he will always give his best for whatever team he plays for, but it ain't about Harry Ottaway, it's about everybody. It's about Cavant's played 2 games in 2 days, behaved impeccably, sat in the ice baths, just literally cracked out the recovery fantastic. You know, I can't speak highly enough of all of them. They've come here, you know, Jack Tucker, 2 games in 2 days, 2 90s back-to-back in this heat. Jesus, I'm knackered just standing there, and they've worked their absolute socks off for the club like they always do. They do it for the right reasons, and it's a thoroughly deserved victory for us.
Yeah, the whole tournament between all four teams, it seems to have been played in an impeccable spirit. Yep. Bock have been superb hosts. Yep. And I gather you're all out for dinner with them now?
Yeah, all out for dinner. I think everyone that played in the tournament, I think there's 100 of us going out for a nice meal now, which is great. And yeah, listen, you want to come, you want to win, but also we have a club with a fantastic history, more history than most, more history than probably all. And you have to come and make sure, and the players are aware, you have to come and represent the club in a certain way. We want to be perceived in a certain way. We're certainly winners, as we proved, and we continue to prove back home. We're no one's mugs, but at the same time, we know how to behave, we know how to conduct ourselves, we know how to be gracious in victory and defeat, and the boys have done everything that I could have asked.
With the trophy in the bag and the players setting off into town for a brotherly meal with their local hosts, everything had come together nicely. There was just one more person that I wanted to catch up with. Jack Smith is a dedicated fan, home and away, equally passionate about trips to Bognor as to Budapest. He once confessed to me how much he'd cried when the Casuals had lost the playoff final 2 years earlier, and so it was time to get his emotions now that he'd seen them lift a trophy in continental Europe.
Oh, absolutely unreal. Like, I can't put it into words, really. Just to be out here to watch Casuals win a cup, it's It's unreal. It's so unreal. Like, I can't put it into words right now. It's still, like, I'm still trying to get over it. Like, all us boys are out here in Budapest. We just watched Casuals win the cup, 90th minute winner. It's just surreal, mate. Absolutely surreal. And I'm so glad that I could say I was out here. I'll see that goal. I've kissed the cup. I've lifted the cup and everything. It's brilliant. Absolutely. I still can't put it into words really that much.
I know what was going through a lot of people's heads in those closing moments. And the two playoff finals, both nil-nils, Casuals dominating the game. It was the exact same pattern, wasn't it?
It literally was. It's like in every playoff final, the goalkeepers have been unreal. And it's like the same today in this final, their goalkeeper was unreal. And it's like we weren't going to put nothing past him. And it's like when it comes to we was thinking, yeah, penalty shootouts, this keeper's going to be... He's going to do something, isn't he? Like, he's going to save one or two. But no, luckily, last death of the game, Ariot away, top bins, can't go wrong, mate.
And this is something you don't exactly get at other non-league clubs, you know?
I remember, didn't Dulwich go away to Germany, to Altona in 96 or something a few years back? That's the only time I've heard about a non-league club going abroad. But this is more special, though, because that was only a friendly, but this was like after a great man in football history that many people have forgotten about. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a clue until like everyone brought up this tournament and I read through like about the guy. It is absolutely insane. He changed football to what it is today. If you look at it, and it's like with Casuals, we shape football around the world. So there's a lot of it that comes together and it's just brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant, mate.
Once, this is not the voices of Jack, Dan, Billy Stringer et al. Belting out this familiar fan's favourite. This is the sound of the Corinthian Casuals players on the team coach after the final. For them, this was no friendly tournament, the delirium apparent from this video, which was taken just before blurry-eyed members of the squad casually took the trophy onto the plane as hand luggage. Of course, the tournament was much more than just a trophy for the pink and brown. The two elderly women in attendance who I described at the start of the show were Susanna and Marta, the daughters of Erno Egri-Erbstein. They came to the tournament to honour their father's legacy, as did Marta's son Stefano. When I asked Stefano about the occasion and the presence of the Casuals, he pointed to the influence of the English game on his grandfather's philosophy.
It's a great event and we are very grateful to Corinthians Casuals because Egri-Erbstein was introducing English football to European countries, to Hungary and Italy. He really knew very well the basic principles of English football, especially fair play. He was the core idea that he tried to convey in the continent, and he got that from England. So that was his philosophy, really.
Yeah. So it's particularly resonant that it's an English team that is playing.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's really great that it's an English team that celebrates after so many years because it's the first celebration of Egri-Erbstein ever since his he passed away. I mean, there were celebrations about Great Torino, but not celebrations specifically of Egri-Erbstein.
Another guest of honour at the final was Antonio Comi, the sporting director of Torino FC. He was particularly touched to see the Casuals team take to the pitch in commemorative shirts, each displaying the name of an Il Grande Torino player. The ultimate vision for the Egri-Erbstein tournament is one of a well-known regular international competition for amateur sides, with the next hurdle being the gaining of sponsorship so that sides can afford to travel abroad. With Casuals fans singing the names of their Hungarian opponents and vice versa, the spirit of fair play, camaraderie and sportsmanship was positively pumping through this tournament's veins. Ultimately, Stefano and Dominic were able to reflect on a weekend in which the seemingly separate histories of Erbstein and the Casuals came together and shared a bond.
All four teams in this tournament are entirely amateur. No one is getting paid. They all play for the love of the game. Would your grandfather have identified with that spirit, do you think?
Especially because the amateurial spirit is the fair play. The heart of amateurial football is fair play. So that he tried to convey this into the professionalism, to convey also the concept of fair play and the concept of friendship within the team. So each player friend of each other in a wide sense of the word.
I reflect on all the moments where people from diverse backgrounds that have gone to the tournament told me how much they were enjoying themselves. That's the key, really. You know, I think of Dan Harris, the groundsman of Corinthian Casuals, saying, I've had a brilliant time, thanks so much for helping to organise this. Or Billy and Jack from behind the goal jumping up and down, going mad. And all the guys from Tolworth just kind of singing for Bayots and Bock because they adopted them as their teams for the weekend. That was all amazing. Seeing the Egrees, Marta and Susanna, understand what it was we were doing in their dad's name. I broke down in tears when the BAK and Corinthian Casuals players came over to the main stand at the end of the game together and were doing the kind of raised hand clap to acknowledge the fans. And then they posed for like a joint team photo. And all the crowd started singing the Corinthian song, you know, the one with the Tolworth Tower in it. And
the grass is green, the sky is blue.
Exactly, a famous name, Corinthian, that one.
Yeah.
They sang that, and that song is brilliant, and that one moved me. And then they immediately followed it up by singing for Bock. Like they were doing Bock to the Icelandic hand clap. And the players joined in with the clap. And I just kind of, wearing sunglasses, no one saw, but I had a cheeky cry at that point. That was really, really quite something. I think the tournament perfectly reflected what binds the Erbstein and the Corinthian stories. It's not immediately obvious. Erbstein believed in playing with a smile on your face, playing the right way, in motivating people with an arm around the shoulder. In very simple terms, he was a Corinthian. His phrase was play fair, smile and pass the ball. And for me, that's what everyone did that weekend. So Erbstein's favourite motto was summarised by the way we play football.
Broadway to Brazil was written and presented by Yarick Zaba alongside Dominic Bliss. The series producer was Brent Davies and Tony Banks was our man in the field. With huge thanks to Corinthian Casuals Football Club and John Forrest, as well as to the wonderful Robin Hutchinson. In late September, Tolworth celebrates the Corinthian Casuals and their historic link to Brazil. For more information on the Vai Tolworth Brazilian Festival, visit tolworthbrazilianfestival.org. That's tolworthbrazilianfestival.org.
How are you liking the city of Budapest? Are you...
it's great. It's absolutely great. Like, lovely bars. Like, I actually went to a bar and they had the greatest food that I've ever had in my life.
Really?
Yeah. I've got this chicken and bacon wrapped with jasmine rice and blue steel and cheese sauce. Oh, lovely, mate.
That sounds lovely. A few beers tonight, then, I imagine.
A few. We're going into the 10, 20, maybe 40, if you like that.